Hey there, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and this is All Things Sensory by Harkla. Together, we're on a mission to help children, families, therapists, and educators live happy, healthy lives.
We dive into all things sensory, special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and so much more. In each episode, we share raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for everyone to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey friends, welcome to another episode of All Things Sensory by Harkla. We are very excited about today's podcast episode. So if you are a new listener, welcome. We hope you love this episode. If you are a lifer, thank you for your ongoing support and thanks for being here.
So today we got to chat with Lauren from Stutter-Free Kids, and she is incredible. I'm so excited for everything that she's doing. She's putting out a new program that I'm really excited about. And she has so much great information for therapists and parents.
Yeah, she's a joy to chat with and very, very knowledgeable, changing the world, the speech therapy world. And she's just really passionate about what she does. You can feel that. I hope this episode resonates with you. Even if you don't have a child or work with children who stutter, I still feel like it is beneficial to learn about what's out there, and you just never know.
Yep. All right, let's do it.
Hello, Lauren. How are you today?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to be here and to meet you both virtually.
Yes, we're excited to meet you in virtual life, as we're saying now. Before we jump in, we need to ask you five secret questions.
Ooh,
okay. And these are secret questions that we ask everyone, but the questions change, so you're getting new ones.
Right.
Rachel, are you starting?
Yes. Okay. These are fun. If you could have any superhero power, what would you have and why?
Oh, I would totally have being able to teleport and never have to fly long haul again. Australia is too far away from everything else.
Yes.
That's a good reason.
I love that. I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. What two items would you take with you if you shipwrecked on a deserted island where all your food and water needs were taken care of?
Oh, two items. Music and books, so that I could.
That's like exactly what I would take. You're like right up my alley.
Well, I mean, what else do you need? If you've got the beach and you've got food and water, you just need something to do.
That's so true.
Oh, that's great. Okay, this one, this is hilarious. Okay, just give me a second. Okay, would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
I feel like it has to be the one horse-sized duck.
That's a big duck, Lauren. It's okay.
100 little horses sounds pretty terrifying.
It would just be coming at you with its wings and beak.
It's terrifying.
Nowhere to focus, right? With 100, they could come at you from everywhere.
That's true. Okay, that's true.
It's such a funny question.
Oh, man. Okay, so you're going with 100 little mini horses.
No, I'm going with the one giant duck.
Oh, you're going with the one. Okay, so you're going with the one big duck that's going to just flap its wings and come at you.
Yeah. I'm going to have to duck and weave, I imagine. Yeah.
Would it? This is not the next question. This is just a side question. Is it better if it's a duck or a goose?
Oh, goose is a different ball game.
They're real mean.
Yes. No, I wouldn't even fight one normal sized goose.
So true.
Oh, dear.
Oh, man. Okay, this one's a little bit more calm.
Okay.
What is your normal morning routine look like?
Normal morning routine. Because I live where the sun shines at like 4 a.m., I'm up pretty early. And yes, morning is usually out in the sunshine with a drink and some stretching. And then I usually start work pretty early. I work from home, so I then set up my home office and have a coffee. I don't really eat breakfast, which I know I should do. And then I just have coffee and go. So yeah, that's me.
It's delightful.
Simple. I like it.
Yes. Oh, is it warm? like pretty much all year round or just right now because it's summer?
It's definitely warm right now, not all year round. I mean, we have a approximation of winter. Our winters are like, you know, 18 degrees Celsius days. I don't know if you can do that math in your head. I can't do the Fahrenheit.
Let me Google it really quick. 18 degrees Celsius. I'm going to do it. I'm curious.
So it's more of a mild winter then, right?
Yeah.
So that's like 64 degrees.
Yeah. California weather, I suppose.
Okay. That's nice. Yeah.
So I need to be there is what we're saying.
It's good. It's definitely bad. Unless you can't handle the heat because it gets ridiculous.
Is it a dry heat or a humid heat?
Oh, it's humid. Yeah, you have to swim through the air.
Yeah. Okay, our last question and our most favorite question of all: what is your personal sensory quirk?
Oh, I have a few. Definitely. Oh gosh, I don't know how to pick one. I can't have any noise coming at me that I don't have control over. So like somebody else's radio, somebody else's television, I can have the TV up really loud, but if somebody else has it up really loud, it's all over.
I have to have
control over my auditory environment.
Me too. And yeah. I know we're going to talk about this during our actual interview too, but I just think it's so interesting that it probably connects to your emotions as well.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, we will jump into it then. Now that everyone knows your deepest, darkest secrets, tell us all the things, what you do, why you do it, how you do it, all the beautiful work you do.
Well, I'm a pediatric speech pathologist. I specialize in stuttering. I'm the owner of a company called Stutter Free Kids. And I live, as I said, on the beautiful Sunshine Coast. So lots of sunshine. And I've been practicing for, gosh, nearly 13 years and specializing specifically in stuttering for the last 4 to 5 years. And recently over COVID have transitioned to a fully telehealth practice. But I've actually found that to be so much better for stuttering treatment. So it's been a happy accident, really.
Why is it better?
I think it's because so many of the kids I see are sensitive and not having to leave their house and wait in a noisy waiting room and be somewhere new and they've got their own toys and they've got their space and it's so familiar that they're actually more calm, more ready and more receptive to do treatment. Also, it's a very parent-based treatment and so the parents aren't stressed. They haven't had to find a park. They haven't been stressed and racing and they can just turn their computer on in their living room, often in their PJs, and it's nice and easy.
Wow. Do you think you'll ever go back to in-person sessions?
I don't see why I would. I think it works so well. You know, I think it's easy also for me. Like I don't have to be in a noisy environment. Oh. I can be at home. You know, I think from understanding my own sensory needs and then the kids that I work with, I think it's a really good setup. And there's a lot of research that's starting to come out on the impact of telehealth, obviously, over the last couple of years with these kiddos. And they're actually showing better results via telehealth than they did in person. So wow. I'm down with it.
Yeah,
that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to focus on stuttering?
So I've always been pretty holistic minded, I suppose. I have always liked to kind of look at sort of a broader approach to things and not just look in one category. And I think it's not necessarily something that I've found a lot of within allied health. I think, you know, there's a lot of, especially through my, you know, university years and training, it was very, you know, this is our role and, you know, stay in these little lines. And that doesn't always work for me, my head. And I found that with stuttering, it actually is something that can't be treated well unless you go broad, unless you look at the whole picture. These kids would respond a little bit to that, you know, narrow, and then there would be this big group of kids that you just could not treat them well unless you were looking at their whole environment, their whole being, their, you know, everything that kind of makes them up in their home environment and all of that. And also, you know, stuttering, if you don't treat it, if you don't get it in those early years, the lifelong ramifications are huge. You know, you've got such big impacts of this particular disorder when it goes into adulthood and, you know, huge mental health problems, you know, like vocational problems, relationship problems, you know, quality of life becomes, you know, for some people really hard depending on how severe it is. And you have this little window of opportunity, you know, before they hit teenage years to actually just stop that and get rid of it and completely change the direction of a child's life. And, you know, that's really, really satisfying to know, yep, I've stopped that in its tracks and it can go in a completely different direction now.
That is so interesting to me for a variety of reasons. The first one, my brother stuttered as a kid. And I mean, we didn't know about like speech therapy and, you know, he never went to speech therapy and, you know, he kind of grew out of it, but yeah. He definitely has had instances in adulthood that we laugh about now and he laughs about it as well. But he got a job working with phones and like, you know, with insurance and calling people. And like one of the first days he was on the phone with someone and they picked up and said hello and he couldn't get his words out. He was just like, and they hung up and he just laughed so hard. He's like, oh my gosh, like what the heck? And we can laugh about it now. But, you know, hearing you say that, you know, those lifelong ramifications, if they don't have treatment early on, it's not necessarily, they're just going to grow out of it. You know, it almost morphs, and this is not my area of expertise, but it seems to morph into something different in adulthood if they do quote unquote grow out of it.
Absolutely. And I think because it has such a social impact, you know, in those early years, before it's really had a social or emotional impact on a child, like most preschoolers don't even know if they're stuttering. Mm-hmm. But once they hit a certain age and they start to get that feedback from, you know, their peers or other adults, and it starts to become, you know, actually a mental health and anxiety, a social inhibition, and, you know, it actually, anything that makes you more anxious or puts any load on the system is going to create more stuttering. And so it can become this vicious cycle. And obviously there's a lot that can be done for adult stutterers as well. It's not like that's it, you can't do anything, but it's a management past that point. That stutter is going to be there and you learn tools and strategies to be able to manage it. But in the early years, we can get rid of it.
So then what causes stuttering? What's the underlying cause here?
Yeah, it's a good question. Researchers are still figuring it out. There's lots of information on, you know, what they see. And, you know, there's been brain scans and all kinds of stuff. It's still a little bit of a mystery. We do know that it's a genetic predisposition to have difficulties with the internal, like, speech timing, I suppose, in terms of how those neurons are connecting and how they're communicating with each other. There's some research that shows that there's, you know, almost like a buildup in the neural pathways that when they get overloaded, that communication doesn't happen in the right way. But it definitely is genetic. You know, there's been studies to see whether it's caused by, you know, a traumatic event or stress or anything like that. And they can't find anything that links, you know, directly to that. Definitely some, you know, stress or environmental issues can exacerbate a stutter, but they haven't ever found that anything in the environment causes the stutter. It seems to be genetic. And if you have someone in your family tree who stutters, there's an 80% chance that there's a child who's going to have a stutter. So like for your family, like you, I know you've got a little one, they, you know, he would be at a higher rate of chance of having a stutter because there's a family history there.
That's so interesting.
That's such a high number.
Yeah. I'm thinking too of like, you know, our family, like, is there anyone else in our family? And like, you know, I'm now our grandpas. I'm like, I'm curious if there is something, you know?
And it is more common in boys, and it often does go through, you know, the grandpa or the uncle or, you know, that sort of thing. And so it is important to know. And, you know, a lot of families just don't know. And a lot of the time it wasn't even talked about back in the day. It was just like, oh, well, they'll get over it.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the time it isn't even until you start the process. Often, you know, a child starts stuttering and then you go, is their family history? And they go home and start talking, oh, yeah, it turns out my dad stuttered and my grandpa. And, you know, you find out back down the line that that was the case all the way through.
So then can you explain what it exactly stuttering is, and like, how do you know if a child has a stutter that needs help with, or if it's just like a phase that they're going through in childhood?
Well, I mean, it's really common for preschool age, you know, between sort of 2 to 5, for that age group to stutter. So there's developmental stuttering or disfluency, and then there's, you know, more true stuttering. If you, you know, go into any kindergarten, you'd hear a lot of stuttering. Lots of kids will be repeating their words like, where's my car? Or I want that. You know, they're just going to be doing these little repetitions. But, you know, stuttering in itself has this big range of what is actually considered stuttering, from, you know, repeating a whole phrase like, I want to go to the park, all the way down to, you know, blocking when no sound is coming out, sort of similar to what your brother might have experienced on the phone, where actually nothing comes out. Sometimes that's accompanied by, you know, tension, or you can see them really trying and straining to get a word out. I had a little one who would go purple in the face because she'd hold her breath so long to try and get a word out, you know, all the way through to, you know, you can have prolonging of sounds where it might sound like, where's mum? Or it might be that that first sound gets really stuck, like, and, you know, it can go on for, you know, 30, 40 repetitions. So in terms of that scale, when it's developmental, it's more likely to be in that, you know, milder end of where is my car? You might just hear a little repetition of a phrase. It doesn't really impact on the message. There's no tension, no stress. And as the listener, there's no difficulty in following the message, and you don't feel stress in your own body versus when you see a child turning purple and, you know, that's very stressful to listen to. There's no message coming out, or sometimes that message just is really impacted where you have to really pay attention to get what it is that they're trying to tell you. And that's when it's falling into that more, that's a, you know, a stutter that is going to be impacting on them in terms of their whole experience of life, how they're communicating with peers, how they're getting their needs met, their own feelings within themselves of how they communicate. And so, you know, we're always looking at where is this severity falling to know, is this just a developmental stutter that, you know, is more than likely going to just be transitional? And also the timeline, you know, if a child's been stuttering for more than 9 months, there's only a 10% chance it's going to go away on its own. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at, you know, how severe is it? How long have they been doing it? Is there a family history? All of these little red flags to go, okay, do we think this is a stutter that's just going to pass through? Just because they're learning language and they're putting those words and connections together and that overloads the brain a little bit, or is there a true struggling of that timing mechanism and do we need to do something about it?
Interesting. Okay, yeah. So then I think my next question, you can't give us all of your secrets on how to help a child with stuttering, but like, what's your go-to trick with helping a kiddo who is stuttering?
Yeah, so stuttering is really an exacerbation of, you know, overloading the system. And that's why it correlates so strongly with temperament and with sensitivity and with sensory processing and anything that causes the brain to be overloaded, attentional deficit disorders, all of those sorts of things are really highly correlated with stuttering because it is, the brain is overloaded with some kind of information, whether it's sensory or physical or cognitive. And so sometimes the best thing you can do is to try and simplify the environment. So often, you know, especially if you looked around a kindergarten, like those places are chaos, you know, there's noise and there's kids running everywhere and there's discussions about who gets this toy. And, you know, there's lots and lots happening in those environments and a lot happening internally for those kids where they're learning language, they're learning social interaction, they're away from mum and dad, you know. So that preschool age is really, really a huge, you know, spike in development and there's so much going on. And so if you're at home with your child and they're stuttering, that's where I tend to go, okay, look where you can simplify. Is the TV on and is there background noise? Can you turn it off? Can you get down to their level so they can see your face? Can you slow your rate of speech so you're not giving them too much information at once? Can you simplify their language and what they're trying to tell you by asking simpler questions rather than tell me everything you did today to did you play with sand or did you do painting? Giving them ways that you can actually help their system, you know, take some of that load off rather than, you know, load them up with big questions and lots of information all at once. Let's simplify it down because anytime we simplify that system, it's going to be more likely that that timing is going to find it easier.
Yeah, I can imagine that a kiddo who stutters is going to have so much anxiety when they're trying to say something and answer questions and then it's just going to make it even harder and then they just like shut down and they're like, well, I give up.
Exactly. And that's especially true for the older kids, you know, once they hit school. That's why, you know, if we can treat it before they go to school, that's, you know, the best case scenario to treat before school because school is a battleground for a lot of kids. Kids are cruel and there's high expectations and they're long days. You don't get to nap anymore. You know, like there's such a huge shift from, you know, those preschool kindergarten years into your schooling years. And yeah, you know, being called on in class to answer a question, like there's social stress, there's being put on the spot, there's making new friends and, you know, it's a lot. So yes, definitely anything that overloads a child's system is going to make stuttering much more significant.
Is there any connection to selective mutism with stuttering?
Oh, look, selective mutism definitely is something that is correlated with an emotional response to, you know, not wanting to talk for whatever reason. I have definitely seen children who they are quite aware that their stutter is really significant, especially those kids where they actually can't get anything out. The little one I was telling you about who would go purple, there's nothing coming out and there's almost no airflow coming out. And I have seen those kids choose not to speak because they are having so much difficulty getting it out. But I do find that when those strategies are put in place, that goes away pretty quickly. That's, you know, not an ongoing thing like selective mutism can be, that needs more sort of psych and play therapy support to be able to, you know, support the emotional side of that. Usually once we can make that linguistic system a bit easier for them, they will start saying even just single words, and then we can build from there.
Another question that just came up in my mind was, you're talking about these kiddos who are very aware of their stuttering challenges. Mm-hmm. Are there typically other diagnoses that go along with stuttering, or can it just be almost like idiopathic? Like it's just its own thing that the child is dealing with and there's no other like comorbidities that the child is going through?
Yeah, it can be both. So, I mean, that's sort of how I ended up looking into high sensitivity, because I was noticing, so part of, you know, the treatment program I use, which is LIDCM, you take a daily rating of their speech. So, you know, on a scale of 0 to 9, where are they sitting today? 0 is no stuttering, 9 is the worst you can imagine. And so we're taking this daily number, and we end up with this lovely little graph over the weeks. When those numbers are high, I was getting parents to just write down, well, what was happening? Was there something going on that day? Is it a birthday party? Was it, you know, they didn't have their nap, or they got sick, or they fell down and they hurt themselves? You know, if there's any significant, put it down. And so, I mean, just in general, the kids that I would see for stuttering, when they didn't have anything else going on, like a language delay or ASD or an attentional problem or sensory processing, which all correlate with stuttering, when they didn't have that going on, they all tended to have a similarity of temperament where they were generally pretty aware, often early to talk or had a lot to say, very sensitive to their environment. So we were noticing that, you know, a birthday party would create a massive spike, going into a loud, noisy environment, eating too much sugar, grandma comes to stay, it's Christmas time, you know, anything that kind of happens in their environment. Or, you know, they had to take antibiotics, or they, you know, had a bad injury or something, you know, we would always see these massive spikes around anything that sort of disrupted their equilibrium, and they seem to in general be more sensitive. And I sort of looked at Elaine Aaron's work on high sensitivity years before and found out that I was. And so when I started kind of writing down these lists, I was like, this looks like that, and started like looking into the research. And there's huge amounts of research on the link between stuttering and temperament, where they, you know, they've shown that children who stutter have difficulties with self-regulation, difficulties with emotional reactivity, difficulties with executive functioning. In general, you know, 50 to 80% of them will have difficulties in all those areas. And so that does obviously correlate with things like ADD and ASD and sensory processing and all of that stuff. But then there's this group of kids where none of that actually fit. But what they actually did fit with was that high sensitivity profile. And so there's another American speech pathologist who years ago started doing her own high sensitivity profiling, and she found 84% of her stuttering clients were highly sensitive on this scale that she developed, versus only 34% of her non-stuttering clients. So she tested all of her clients, and the stuttering ones were way, way higher in these sensitivity profiles. So yeah, it definitely has this sort of correlation.
That's so interesting.
The thing that I think of with, you know, the anxiety and the high sensitivity is then primitive reflexes. And I would be so curious on primitive reflex testing of these kiddos who stutter.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've worked with some amazing OTs over the years who are really competent in treating that. And when we can combine, especially for the kids where treatment isn't straightforward, where the LIDCM program is really effective. You know, it is something that I still use all the time, but I do find that there is this pretty big group of kids where we get so far and then we just can't get them the rest of the way. And when I've been able, you know, when I've worked in practices where I've had easy access to OTs and able to have that dual input, and especially when they've had, you know, primitive reflex support and, you know, all of that sensory integration stuff, and the parents are adding in all of that probe and stuff during their, you know, at home, then the outcomes are so much faster and we see those numbers just completely trickle down. And now that I'm working virtually, I'm seeing people all over the country. So some of them have access to it and some of them don't. And when I can kind of help them find somebody in their area who can work on that, yeah, absolutely, the results are so much better.
That's amazing.
Hey, we need to take a quick break from this episode to let you know that we have a new course launching very soon. And if you've been around a while, you know that we already have two awesome courses that are digital, the Sensory Diet course and our Primitive Reflex course. This new course that is going to launch soon is called Improving Behavior and Focus in the Classroom. And we dive into how to implement sensory strategies into the classroom for teachers, educators, paraprofessionals, and therapists. Our goal with all of this information is to help foster inclusion for every child in the school setting. And this is step one, getting the knowledge into the hands of those who need it most. So stay tuned. We will let you know our exact launch date as soon as we can. But in the meantime, if you want to check out our other courses, you can go to harkla.co and check out all the other things we have. All right, let's get back to the episode. You're referencing the Lidcombe?
Yeah, Lidcombe, yeah.
Lidcombe. Okay, can you share more about what that program is?
Yeah, so it's an Australian program. It was created in Sydney in the university in Lidcombe, hence the name. And it's considered a direct treatment. So when it comes to stuttering, you can do indirect treatment where you just get the parents to change something in the environment, or you can do direct treatment where you're doing something directly with the child. So Lidcombe's considered a direct treatment, but it's a parent training program. So I teach the parents how to deliver the treatment daily at home. And really the whole premise is that you're setting up a daily activity, you know, 20, 30 minutes where you're simplifying things. So it might be you simplify the language, you simplify the noise, it's just one-to-one, and something that the child enjoys, because we really want their engagement and their, you know, as you know, when a child is happy and engaged, those pathways are lining up and, you know, everything is better. And instead of asking big, open, complex questions like, tell me everything you can see in the book, you know, I teach parents how to ask really simple questions. And for some kids, if, you know, like the little one who couldn't get anything out, we were aiming for just one word. And so it might be, and it might be just one word with one syllable. And, you know, so it might be in a book looking at, oh, is it a train or a bus? And we're expecting that they will tell us bus. And when they do, when they're able to say that word, you know, smoothly or fluently, which is a word we use a lot in Lidcombe, then the parent gives them some feedback and praise. That was really smooth. Oh, you said that smoothly. I heard your word come out smoothly. So we're giving them that positive feedback. Initially, when the program was created, there was positive reinforcement and contingencies. And then there was also negative. So it would be, if not necessarily negative, but like you would try and correct them. So if they said something disfluent and you'd given them a lot of praise, you might say something like, oh, that was bumpy. Do you want to try it again? I don't use that. I have found that especially for sensitive kids, that is very, very bad news, because they are so reactive to anything that even sounds like a criticism. I found that the treatment works so much better when we don't go anywhere near a correction until maybe way, 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 way down the track when they're almost completely done. And then it might just be a suggestion like, oh, do you want to try it smoothly? And, you know, something that's really, really neutral. But even then, I found it. It. And there's research to sort of support that they're kind of going, well, actually, that might not have been the best idea. Let's maybe just dial back on that. And so basically daily practice where you're setting the child up to have that successful experience of speaking fluently, you're giving them that verbal contingency and feedback that they are smooth, and really just working on building that neural pathway every day, a little bit by little bit. And it is quite amazing. I have so many parents where they go, surely this isn't going to work. I'm just reading a book to them for 10 minutes and, you know, telling them when they're smooth. But because we track those numbers, it's so easy to see, oh, they were at eights and nines and now they're at sevens. Oh, now they're at sixes. Oh, they were at fives and then they had a spike. What happened? And so that's when we go, okay, let's have a look. What happened that day? Oh, they didn't sleep and they went to a birthday party. And great. So now we know that is in their profile of they need that sleep. They don't react so well in busy environments. And then we can bring those numbers back down again. So the data collection part is so vital in the program, because it constantly gives us feedback. Where is that child? What is that environment like for them internally, externally? And is there anything we need to tweak in the program for them or in their environment?
I love that. I feel like data collection is tricky in OT for certain populations, but I mean, just hearing you talk about the like simple rating scale and being able to identify what almost like the triggers are for the kiddos. I feel like that needs to happen in OT for like sensory processing. You know, what are the triggers? And let's look at the whole picture, because it's not just one situation or one area of difficulty. It's the whole picture. It's the moon. It's going to the bathroom. Did they go today? Has it been 3 days? And so teaching parents to look at all of those things, the whole child, it makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. And you can almost use it predictively with some kids. Like I've got some kids where their numbers will start to go up and will go, nothing's happening. And then they'll get sick 3 days later. Mm-hmm. And they're in that incubation period. Wow. And now we know, we can see those numbers go up and we're like, they're probably getting sick. And then bang on time, there they are sick. And so once you sort of know what those patterns are, I mean, it's just invaluable information, really.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious, why is this program only in Australia? Like, are there similar programs in other parts of the world? Like, what's going on here?
It's an Australian design program, so I think it's really heavily taught within our universities. It's a really easy access for training here in Australia, but I definitely know there are therapists in other countries that do it as well. I just don't think it's quite as in Australia, it's the go-to, like, this is what we do. You know, in the UK, they have other programs. They have like the Palin program, which is more of an indirect treatment. I read this really funny transcript between the creator of Lidcombe and the creator of Palin having this basically like verbal war, and they've printed it as a program. It's just really funny. You know, so there's contention about which is the best one. And to be honest, I think we need both. I think that, you know, what Palin gets really right is that they look at the environment and they teach the parents how to deal with that environment, not necessarily so heavily onto the sensitivity and sensory stuff like I do, but they don't ignore it, whereas Lidcombe doesn't necessarily look at that at all. So that's where I kind of go, we need both. We can't do one without the other, especially for these kids where regulation and sensitivity and sensory processing and attention is such a big deal.
Yeah. Okay, I have another random question.
Go for it.
So there is some research on vestibular input and speech and the connection between them. And if you put a kiddo on a swing, their speech is supposed to improve and they're going to communicate more. Have you ever seen that happen? I know you're not an OT, but I mean, it's hard in the home setting with telehealth, but yeah, I'm curious if you've heard anything about that.
Look, I've definitely seen it. I think I was working in this really amazing clinic where we had dual spaces to do both speech and OT at the same time. Absolutely. My own little guy has, you know, done a lot of OT and, you know, in the swing and all of that sort of stuff. So it's definitely something that I do see, you know, obviously for the kids that need it. But I think, you know, from the parents that I work with as well, I've definitely seen how their fluency does improve when they're getting, you know, the right kind of input. And that's where it's just so nice to see. There are so many families now have a swing in their house, just that sort of stuff where it's so lovely to see. Yes, actually, that is so important. And even just from a regulation perspective, when they're regulated, their fluency is better, their speech is better. Like communication and speech is a top tier activity. Mm-hmm. If any of your lower level foundational needs aren't in check, then communication goes out the window. Like, you know, if you're upset or if you're hungry, or, you know, we experience it ourselves. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody if I'm tired and hungry and hot, you know, whatever, don't talk to me. And our kids are the same. Like, you know, they need those foundational things to be in place for communication to be optimal. And when it's not, it will, you know, it will suffer.
Okay. So cool. I love it.
I think that's so important to remember is like, yeah, we're all like that. We all, you know, we always like to say we all have sensory systems.
Yeah.
And we all struggle with communication when our sensory needs aren't met, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Or emotional, you know, like if you've ever had to try and have a big conversation with someone and you're really upset or emotional, it's almost impossible to think clearly and to say what you really want to say. And our emotions, our sensory experience, our, you know, hunger, basic bodily needs, you know, that's all down below communication.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Definitely. Yep. Okay, let's chat a little bit about your background. You have a background in integrative nutrition and health coaching, and I'm sure you incorporate that into your sessions as well, or is that a completely different thing that you do?
So I did that in 2015. So I'd already been a speech pathologist since 2008. And this was around that time where I was going, there's more going on with these kids and I don't have the skills, the knowledge, the information to be able to know exactly how to help, basically, or even like where to refer them. Not that I would be the one doing it, but like I need the information to know what I'm looking at so I know how to guide these parents in the right direction. So I took a year off and I traveled through Europe. I lived in the Netherlands for a year and I just studied and did integrative nutrition for a whole year and did some health coaching while I was doing that just to kind of get that feel of, you know, helping on that more adult level because I've always done so much pediatrics. It was just incredible to kind of really understand, you know, the body and the connection with nutrition. And, you know, it doesn't just look at nutrition. It also looks at your environment and, you know, your home environment and how you're experiencing your life and how that is, you know, part of our nutrition and nourishment as well. And it really just completely broadened my perspective on what I do. And so then I came back to Australia and picked back up where I left off. But that's when I really started to get into stuttering and really honing in on looking at it from an integrative and holistic perspective and, you know, talking to naturopaths and nutritionists. And luckily I was in a space where I had access to, you know, incredible OTs and play therapists and, you know, just really starting to build this understanding of what kids really need to be able to function and thrive. And it's not just our one little avenue. We need it all.
I know. And I love that you take it from such a team approach and you're like, no, let's also talk to these guys and these guys over here and make sure that we're addressing everything.
Yeah. And you know, that's a big deal for a lot of parents and that's really overwhelming. Like, you know, oh, now you need to see these people and now you need to see these people. And so I'm actually creating a program at the moment to sort of bring that information in to be able to have, you know, play therapists and OTs and nutritionists and naturopaths who are all discussing the same topic of, you know, high sensitivity, stuttering, and just like overall well-being for these kids. Because highly sensitive children are also more prone to food sensitivities and allergies, and they're sensitive in general. You know, they're the ones that pick up on that strange smell on the laundry that's a new thing that's got actually a chemical in it that's giving them a rash. And, you know, like these kids are, you know, they're the little canaries in the coal mine. They know as soon as there's something that's not quite right.
Yep. So you're building a new program.
Online program due to come out early next year. So deep in creation mode at the moment, but it's coming together.
Yeah. So we're recording this episode in November, but I think it'll come out in January.
Aiming for January at the moment. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. Is this going to be a program for parents and caregivers, for therapists?
Ideally parents and caregivers, but I do a lot of supervision of other therapists and I'm getting a lot of feedback that they're going, we want this too. I think it'll be, you know, across the board for anybody that's wanting to really understand basically what I was saying about those foundational needs of, you know, that if your child is stuttering, if it's, you know, if it's just a little developmental stutter, you know, it may just go away, but we don't know. We don't know which those kids are going to be. We're piecing those things together. And one of the most common things that parents will get told, regardless of, you know, what their child is experiencing, if they've just started stuttering and they seek support, whether it's with a, you know, general practitioner or with a speech pathologist, they'll generally be told, just wait and see. Just wait and see. We don't know. And first of all, that's highly distressing for most parents because stuttering, you know, it really, really hits all of those stress markers because it's not a child that never spoke. It's usually a child that spoke very well and was very verbose. And then overnight, and sometimes it is overnight, they wake up and they are stuttering and they're stuttering sometimes really significantly. And the general go-to is, oh, just wait and see. And especially in families when we know there's a really high chance, there's high sensitivity there. Chances are the child is highly sensitive, but probably also one of those parents is as well because it's genetic. And then it's like, wait for 6 to 9 months with the most stress you've ever experienced and try not to do anything that's going to mess it up.
Oh my God. Crazy.
I feel like we can do better. I feel like, you know, so the whole premise of my program is don't wait and see. We're going to support and see. You know, we don't know if this child is necessarily going to need treatment. And if they don't, fantastic. But we need to be doing something in the meantime, especially because we know this population is so likely to be sensitive. And there's so much learning that can be, you know, in place for these parents, where they can be learning about their child's sensory system, learning about play, learning about attachment, learning about nutrition, learning about that whole picture, so that they have all those skills there. And chances are, you know, if that child is going to grow out of it, they're in the best environment to do that. And if they're not going to grow out of it, they've got all the skills they're going to need for that foundational support to go into the LIDCM treatment or therapy of some kind. So they've actually, you know, got all of that information and support already in place.
Is there a reason why practitioners will say wait and see? I mean, is there a barrier to get service if it's not? Do they want to make sure that it's a real stutter before they refer?
I think there's a, you know, there's a multitude of reasons. I think that is part of it, because LIDCM treatment, I say to my parents all the time, it's a marathon. Once we start, we don't want to stop and start, you know. And for some kids, it's 12 weeks. For some kids, it's 18 months. We don't know how long their little brain is going to take to have that neural pathway be built and be able to have that fluent speech. And it is a daily thing, and it is quite intensive, you know, 30 minutes every day. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when you've got other kids and you've got work and you've got, and especially if your kid's got, you know, sensory issues or, you know, regulation issues, and you have to try and convince them to come sit down and read this book, and, you know, like, it's a lot. And so I think there is definitely that of, you know, we don't want to jump the gun and go, yes, we're going to do this treatment if this child actually would have grown out of it anyway. Also, wait lists are, I don't know about what's going on over there, but they're incredibly long here. You know, sometimes it's 8 to 9 months to get in to a place anyway, and there just isn't the capacity. And so they're, you know, in terms of, you know, risk assessment going on in clinics, it's like, well, this child definitely needs it now. This child might grow out of it. Let's, you know, put you on a wait list and see you in, you know, 6 months sort of thing. So I think it's both. I think it's capacity and it's that uncertainty, but that uncertainty is a really, really tough place for parents to sit in for those many months.
Yeah.
We have that same challenge over here.
Yeah.
So what is the biggest challenge with what you do then every day?
Oh, I think I love what I do. I think that especially in telehealth, there's so much flexibility. So if a child is dysregulated, okay, let them be under the table. It's fine. I'm going to talk to mom anyway. If they need to run outside, fine, go do that. That's fine. In a clinic space, you can't do that. It's like you have to pen them in. So there's so much that is actually, you know, really manageable. I think, you know, the challenges come in little ways, you know, seeing parents who are really highly distressed and, you know, especially in those first couple of weeks when they don't know and they don't have that confidence that is it going to work, and they're, you know, their stress levels are, you know, through the roof. But one of the hardest parts is actually, especially since I started my Instagram, is that I get contacted all the time by families outside Australia that I can't work with. And they're so stressed, and they're on wait lists, and they're just, you can see these kids are not getting the treatment that they need, and they're not getting any support, and there's nothing I can do because I can't work one-to-one outside of Australia from, you know, insurance reasons. And so that's really what motivated me to make this program as well. It's like, I need to be able to give something to these parents that are in the same position. I would love to work with you, but I can't. So let's make something that at least you've got some information and some guidance there to be able to support you, because that is the hardest part, to be like, yeah, I see you're in real stress there and that's awful. Good luck with that. Oh. It's just the worst.
That was going to be one of my questions was, do you see clients worldwide? I feel like you are an invaluable resource, and that's really frustrating that you can't.
Yeah, really, really frustrating. So watch this space. That's coming. It's coming.
How do you stay motivated?
I think it's pretty easy when you hear the stories and you get to know people. And I think in traditional speech therapy, you know, we do a lot of work with the child. And so sometimes mum's in the room or dad's in the room, and sometimes they're not. And it's that real connection with the child, which is beautiful. And then with this, it's really a connection with the parent. And so I think when you're talking with a parent, because children aren't able to tell you all the things that they're going through, parents are able to tell you, you know, what they're going through, and then what it also means for them to have this help and support and improvement, to have that sort of very visible this is what happened. You know, they come each week and go, guess what? You know, we went into this environment and this was different to last time, or they went to a birthday party and it wasn't a nine this time. They were able to talk to their friends. Or even with the older ones that I work with, you know, oh my God, this is the first time I've ever heard them talking positively about their stutter and understanding it, and just getting that feedback of that real close connection with a parent who is able to kind of express what it's doing for their child and their life is really motivating.
Yes. I love it. You can feel the passion in what you do. Like, you can totally tell that you love what you do.
So awesome. I feel like you could keep talking for another hour all about this.
I could keep listening.
I know, me too. I'm like, I want this program that you're doing.
I know. Okay, so that's what's next. You're working on this program. Mm-hmm. How can people listen to you? We do have a lot of listeners in Australia. So for those listeners in Australia, for our listeners in the States who can access your program come next year, this year, you know, it's weird. Like
in 2022.
Yeah. How can people soak up all the things you have to offer?
So you can find me on Instagram. I'm under @stutterfreekids. That's where I do most of my posting and education. I am on Facebook too, but just not as much. And then obviously I've got my website, which is stutterfreekids.com. If you're wanting to join the wait list for the program that's coming and kind of stay in the loop, it's on my website as well, stutterfreekids.com/waitlist. So you can definitely jump over and add your email to that, and then you'll sort of be in the loop for anything that's coming. You'll be the first to know. On my website, it's all my contact details as well. You can send me an email, you can get in touch. And yeah, if you're in Australia and wanting one-to-one support, I have, you know, little places that do pop up, because LICM is such a beautiful program. We do see the end of it with, you know, a lot of clients, and those spaces do become available, even though, you know, the wait lists are really long. So yeah, if you're in Australia and need support, then definitely reach out.
I love hearing that there's an end to the program and they graduate. That
Dude, that is one of the best things as well. Graduation day is a good day.
Big deal.
Yeah, a good day.
Before we let you go, what is one piece of advice that you can give to our listeners?
It's the same advice I give to all the parents. Trust your gut, trust your instincts. If you've been told something by a doctor or another therapist or something that doesn't sit right with you, especially if it's just wait and see, trust yourself. If that doesn't feel right, you know your child. And, you know, get another opinion, look further, keep pushing, whatever it is that you feel that you need to do, trust yourself. Mums and dads and parents, they know when something is not quite the way it should be. And yeah, just trust that.
So it's a great piece of advice.
I love it. Okay. Yep. Do you have any questions for us?
Oh, I just love what you guys do. I just get so much, amazing, you know, information from your websites and your Instagram, and, you know, it's fantastic. Oh, question for you. I mean, I won't throw those ones at me that you guys threw at me at the beginning.
We've had people do that before. Like, actually, why don't you answer your own questions? And we're like, oh, crap.
I do kind of want to know about the duck horse thing. So, you know.
Oh no.
Really?
That's
joking.
Like, I have my answer.
Okay, well, go for it then. I'd love to take it.
I would choose the horse-sized duck for sure, because I feel like it'd be easier to get away from.
Yeah. It's gotta be slow, right?
Right? Or I can like go in my house and it can't get in.
But you have to fight it is the thing.
Oh man. Yeah, I don't know. Probably still would choose that. Do I get a weapon? Is this gonna get violent?
Yes.
Rachel, what would you choose?
I think I would shoot a net at the 100 little horses and just capture them all with my net gun.
I like that you're not killing them. You're just trapping them.
Oh, you just trap them and, you know, herd them away. I love it. Well, Lauren, we could honestly chat with you all day. It has been such a fun time chatting with you and getting to know you and learning about stuttering and everything that you're doing to help so many clients. So thank you.
Well, thank you both. It's been a privilege to come on, and I'd love to come back sometime. Maybe when my program's done, I can come back and tell you all about it.
Yes. Yeah, we're definitely going to stay in touch.
That would be great.
Love that.
Okay. So I love her and I want to go to Australia to visit her.
We have so many people we need to go visit. We always talk about this. We need like a podcast retreat where like everyone who we've interviewed, we just meet on an island somewhere and hang out and drink and relax and talk about all the things.
All the things. Oh my gosh. We have to make this happen.
I know.
First, make sure you go follow Lauren on Instagram, stutterfreekids. Check out her website, get on the waitlist for her program. If it's not already out, we're recording this ahead of time. So her program comes out anytime, probably by this time.
And thank you for listening. Make sure you leave a review on iTunes. Let us know your thoughts there. Those reviews help us reach more people like you who need to hear our podcast, who maybe haven't, because there's so many out there nowadays. And also take a screenshot while you are listening and tag us on Instagram at All Things Sensory Podcast so we can know that you're listening. And then also tag Lauren at Stutter Free Kids. Just tag us all.
You have a lot of things to do now, so we're going to let you go so you can go do all those things and have a great day.
All right, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. If you want more information on anything we mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get all of the show notes.
We always have the show notes and links, plus full transcripts to make following along as easy as possible for everyone. If you have follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @harkla_family. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla, whether it's for one of our digital courses, one of our sensory swings. The discount code SENSORY will save you 10%. That code is SENSORY. Head over to harkla.co/sensory to use that code right now so you don't forget.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.